Hello, Sally. Good morning. I'm super excited about us having a chat about construction, energy, and consumption.
Hi, Katia. Thanks for inviting me. It's my pleasure to enjoy your podcast.
I just thought we'd have a chat as sort of architects and environmental specialists, one to another,
yep.
And let people hear our thoughts on a variety of issues. So the first one I wanted to have a chat about was the concept of technology and nature, or technology versus nature.
Yeah. I think it's a very good and best choice that you have for the start of the conversations, because most of us usually think that people in ordinary things that maybe technologies just push away the nature, and we're just, oh, we want to forget about the nature we're going through. We want to have cities that without any of trees or anything. So they have this kind of imagination of when we're talking about the future cities and anything. But the truth is that the time is past, and now we're understanding that this is a time that we need some kind of the environmental things if we want to continue our existence, if we love our children, and if we want to continue our human being. So this is the thing that we should really take care of, that how is it possible that we want to use the technology beside the nature, not against them.
What do you think about technology in general? Has it been set up thinking about it in a holistic manner, or has it been set up just to serve human beings and whatever happens thereafter will solve later?
Yeah, I think that as a whole, technology or anything is like a knife. Mm. You can use it to do a very good things. You can solve so many problems. You can do anything. You can cut the fruit and eat it, and that's pretty good. But otherwise, you can use it to kill someone. So technologies are like that. We have the knives for so many centuries, from when we were starting to exploring the fire and then anything. So
yes,
we have the technology, but it means that for a very long time, we used that knives not in an appropriate way. So we ruined other environments. We made the cities that shouldn't be, but it doesn't mean that we should put away the knives. Just change how we use the knife. So we should have some new application for that. We should explore the new opportunities. We are open to that. And this is what we are architects and environmental things.
Let's talk about the social aspects of this thing.
Yep.
My feeling is that people in the past, before, call it, modern day technology came around, they were very resourceful. They had found ways to, as an example, make their homes comfortable without air conditioning.
Yep.
So do you feel that some of the skills that previous generations had have been lost because of current modern technologies?
Yes, I'm totally agree with that. You know, I'm originally from Iran, mm-hmm. so we have so many buildings that adopted to the environment, and people learned how to deal with these kind of the hard situations. Many of the centuries live without any kind of the air conditioning in a very hard situations, in deserts and in so many places. And this is not adopting, but the building and the people adopting themselves to the environment.
Yes.
They are not trying to use many of the resources to make the balance, you know. So there is a various answer to your questions. And I want to just let you know that we as a generation, next generation, should bring something from our ancestors. We should learn that how to deal with the environment. We should decrease a little bit from our top priorities. Are convenient things, are all of the conveniences should be 100% accurate? I don't think so. So we need some kind of decreasing our anticipation. We should have something from the past and use it in the next generation.
Yes, that's right. And I feel in the past, as much as people knew, then technology came around. And I think we're going into the next topic now. We're going to talk about building blocks to death or resuscitation. So talking about this sort of relationship between humans and the natural world or the earth. Post-World War II technology, there's been this disconnect between nature and human beings, like you've just described.
Yep.
And I also feel that it is now time. You can't go backwards, like you said, where you say, nope, everybody, no more air conditioning.
Yep.
Not everybody, you know, go back to traditional clothing style because that had a cooling effect in hot climate. Continuing on with our building blocks to death or resuscitation, let's talk about some of the symptoms of this pervasive use of technology to create comfort rather than joining with natural forces.
I want to say some facts about it. That building sector is mainly the main consumer of the electricity in Australia, for example. So we have mining, we have so many things, we have offices, yes, we have so many things, but the buildings just solely consume the main electricity in Australia. So why? This is a very big question, that why you want to use this so much electricity in our homes. And we want to break it down to where it goes from the most consumptions, and then want to analyze how is it possible that we want to decrease this kind of the electricity consumptions, mm-hmm. because it's directly correlated to CO2 emissions, and this is directly coming through the global warming, mm-hmm. and it has a very bad effect on the environment. So this is how our work is started. Okay, we see that I didn't see really as the Earth as is going through dying. I know it's a very hard situation, but it's not dying. So probably we are in a good time in our generation.
Mm-hmm.
We can do something to make it live more longer or less. So mm-hmm. we are in a very hard situation. We should believe it and we should accept it. It's not possible that we want to postpone it for later, mm-hmm. for the next generation. I want to say, no, it's not possible. We need a very immediate action right now if we want to have a better environment for later. So we know that buildings is the main consumer, and we know that around 30% of this electricity is using in buildings. So step by step, we are trying to investigate how we can decrease this kind of consumptions. We want to focus on the buildings, we want to analyze every part, and we want to give a very implicable solutions for that. This is how you can decrease your electricity consumptions, and this is our job.
Mm-hmm. Just a question about, you said 30% consumption goes towards buildings. When you look at all of the electricity that is produced and its various consumptors of that electricity,
yep.
30% of it goes to buildings, and that yep. is the biggest slice of that pie.
Exactly.
Everybody else, like industry users, are smaller than 30%, etc. Sure. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, this is what we're thinking about that, and that's why we think that the building has a very big impact, especially in Australia. And I want to say that Australia as a per capita is the most consuming country in the world. One of the toppest, even more than USA or China. So
this
depends
on how you calculate it. If you calculate it based on square meterage available per capita,
yeah.
counting in all the deserts, which you would never
yes,
want to live
see.
In,
yeah.
Where there is shortages of fresh water, et cetera, and temperature issues,
yeah.
Then you get a different percentage.
Yeah.
And I feel sometimes some of the policy that comes out is based on that,
yeah.
call it slightly skewed calculation.
Yeah.
So when you calculate it appropriately with taking into account only, I suppose, the square meterage of land surface that is usable for...
And livable area.
Yeah, livability, correct. So for cities and urban expansion, then please tell me, enlighten me as to the figures of that.
Yeah, so you're totally right. With consideration of these small parts, it will be much higher. So I want to say that every one of us in Australia is consuming so much electricity in compared to other countries. So let's talk about that, and let's see where we're consuming the most part of this electricity. We know it is on buildings, so this is a very good start. So we want to explore every one of us that have some kind of responsibilities for our next generations. We want to analyze where you can decrease your electricity consumptions, or maybe in somehow how you can decrease your sustainable electricity production. So maybe this is the other part. So we have so many solar homes in Australia also. Mm-hmm. Around one third of the homes in Perth, in WA, have some kind of solar panels. So this is a good option. So we have a very good solar production. So we want to have to both sides. At the first, we want to know that how is it possible that we want to decrease the consumptions, because this is 100%. And then on the next stage, we are going through how we can enhance the solar productivity. Then we can make balance between that, and we can decrease the amount of the electricity consumptions per capita in Australia and specifically in Perth.
So let's talk about, obviously, we're not politicians, you know, activists of any description. We are academics and environmental architects.
Yep.
So let's talk as to how do we look after that, you know, reducing energy consumption aspect via architecture. And so I was going to start that by saying, if homes and the buildings are the biggest culprit of energy consumption, do you think there is a relationship between that and the way we build and the way we plan our cities? What are your thoughts on that?
Of course, this is the things that we're talking about, it, and I'm pretty sure one of the very good options about the path is the weather.
Yes.
This is a very good option that we have here. You know, when you explore the weather in the path, you can understand that 25 centigrade is a good normal temperature for human body.
Yes.
And hopefully we have Perth is around there. And a very good option that by applying just for two or three design aspects of the passive design, I can tell you that we can have 90% of energy consumptions. We can have a homes that can cover all of the weathers if we have the enough insulations, if we consider the design parts. Probably we can decrease electrical consumption that is related to mostly about the air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can decrease the air conditioning. So this is a very good option about the path. So if we are looking forward to the environmental designing path, we have a very, very good future. So that's why we just need a good immediate action and good knowledge behind it. And then we have a very bright future in front of us.
Yes, indeed. And look, I agree. Yes, we do have some very hot days in summer because, yep, of course, we have cool rather than cold winters.
Yep.
But another great thing, so the temperature is pretty much controllable.
Yep.
It is also within that temperate climate type. Places that are temperate, you know, you've got a whole gamut of environmental design tools if you want to achieve thermal comfort.
I want to continue about the Perth environmental things. I want to say that the Perth has also some kind of these subdivisions of the climate. There is some kind of the different kind of approach toward the climate, microclimate things in Perth. For example, BCC just provide us with five to six difference in climate zones. So most of the Perth is in climate zones number 5, but we have difference also, for example, the amount of the trees and vegetations and anything can affect our local environmental designing. So if you are near the coast, so there's another point of the view if you are near the river or in the further suburbs. So every these kind of the things have some kind of the different design environmental designing things that the architect and anything should care about us. Yes, we have so many rules and regulations on BCC, but the important is that they're not so much related to the local environmental thing. So this is the thing that we should take care of that, and we should explore more about how this kind of the distinct climate things can affect our buildings. And for example, how we can build our facades and anything that is related to macro climate things. So
yes,
if you have any kind of the neighbors, if you have shadowings and you have anything, how is it possible that you can have the rotation of your homes? So this is so many things that affect your passive designing.
I think this is where environmental architecture and environmental landscape architecture and even city planning starts to come into its own in terms of being the conduit, the glue between technology and the way society wants things, and nature. We are that translator, if you want, to put the old knowledge back into the new technology so that the new technology works more harmoniously with the natural environment, and therefore we are part of the solution.
Yeah.
And this is what I find really exciting about being part of construction that, you know, construction to destruction.
Yeah.
You know, you think they're clearing all the trees, they're flattening all the ground in Perth. There's a tendency to go and dig out all our sand dunes, which is where a lot of our biological diversity exists. So I feel like we really are in the right place. And this gets sort of onto another concept, which is the way out. And this gets onto the concept of the architect was project manager, you know, designer extraordinaire. So the builders got better and better and better at bringing those design features for a reasonable budget to a larger variety of people. And now it's got to the stage where architects either just do design one-off, like any other profession. Architecture, urban design, planning has to move with the times and has to reinvent itself. And the times are the ones we just spoke about. And there is great scope for us to reinvent ourselves as specializations, as nearly consultancies to building firms so that they can achieve for a reasonable price to most people some technology, which is the building, which is imbued with old style knowledge, which is how do we live harmoniously with the natural climate to achieve solutions in environmental issues.
I think this is also a good time to start, because at this kind of the next generations, those, as you have mentioned, about 20 or 30s that are starting there, maybe their first home buyers are thinking about it. Most of the people are thinking about it, that what's our impact on environments. Yes, you know, in lives, we have choices. In every part, we can go everywhere, and everything is related to our choices. And I think this generation is so careful about the environmental choice. But the lack of information is here is really understandable. Yes, they have so many websites and internet connections. Yes, I know. But it is very time consuming if you want to go to every website and just have some tiny information from that one and just go through that one. So it's really, even though I'm as a researcher in this field, I really collect every piece of my studies from hundreds of articles. So I know this is how it will become time consuming, and you understand.
Yes, I totally do.
So we are just trying here to give the next generation some kind of the, I don't want to say the perfect, but the good source of the information that how is it possible and how you should take consideration in your choices, what criteria and what information you should have it before you want to make a choice. If you have something in mind, you can ask an architect, you can ask a home build designer that what do you think about the rotation, what do you think about the ratio of the windows, what do you think about so many aspects. So if you have some kind of the, I don't want to say very good information and professional, no, because this is the job of the architect, but if you have some kind of the initial knowledge as you have it for everything,
yes,
then that will be helpful for us to go through a better environment in the future.
Indeed. Okay, fantastic, Sally. Look, it was amazing to talk to you. I think I'll have you again.
Thanks for having me, and I'm really happy to continue our speeches and can have talk about it in different topics.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks for having me again.